All right. Welcome, everyone. Justin Bader here. This is episode 63 of the Instructional Leadership Show. And this is part four of our ongoing series that we're calling the Continuity Project. Today, we are talking about developing a cadence of meetings, a schedule, a rhythm, a beat of meetings to bring people together, to maintain professional relationships, and to get the work done. So if you are joining us live, welcome. Let me know that you are here, and I'll be asking some questions, and I will have a specific place that I would love to have your input as we go. Let me know for now that you are here. And what I'm going to do very briefly is send out just a little message to Rumble that we are live. But while I'm doing that, I want to make sure that you know about the Continuity Project. You can sign up at principalcenter.com/continuity. And as I mentioned, this is our fourth training that we have done in this series around creating a sense of continuity for staff and students. You know, there have been so many disruptions, there's so much uncertainty, there's so much work that needs to get done under what frankly are high uncertainty and kind of high anxiety circumstances that I believe it's worth the effort, it's worth the trouble for us as leaders to really put some collective thought and collective effort into creating that sense of continuity. Even though we know many things are uncertain, we know that many of our plans are going to have to change, there are some things that we can do to move the ball down the field and create that sense of certainty that people need. So what we are going to do here in just a moment is talk about that cadence of meetings. So I'm going to send a quick reminder here and get that out on Facebook Messenger. Cadence of meetings. Welcome Betsy and Pam and John. All right, join me now to talk about a cadence of meetings in the Continuity Project. All right, and give me just one second. We'll get this sent out right here. There we go. All right, John is joining us from Kansas. Let us know where you are tuning in from. And you should see my slides on the screen here. All right, we are good to go. Welcome everyone. Samantha, great to see you here. So in the Continuity Project, we are addressing three particular kinds of challenges. The practical challenge of how we'll get the work done, and of course, collaboratively, in terms of how we work together as adults, that requires meetings, right? On a cultural level, you know, we are not just robots that sit around a table to do tasks. We are people who collectively have a professional culture, and our students will have a classroom culture and a school culture that they experience and learn within. And of course, that's going to be substantially different if students are coming in shifts or if we're, you know, starting the year online, things like that. But the primary way of thinking about this that we're going to focus on today is the relational level. You know, working remotely, working virtually, maybe social distancing when we are on campus in person has a profound impact on our professional relationships that as leaders, we really need to think through and really be intentional about if we're going to have those strong relationships that allow us to get the work done, allow us to work together and meet students' needs. Welcome Erica from California, Samantha from New York, Betsy from Ohio, Amanda from Arkansas, that's where I am as well, John from Kansas, Pam from North Carolina. Welcome, welcome. Thanks so much for being here. So I've got two essential questions for us in this session. And by the way, this is the fourth session we've done. We've also talked about the overall challenges that we face in our first training. Then we talked about ritual and metaphor as key focal points for leaders. And today we're talking about a cadence for meeting. And specifically, how can a predictable cadence of meetings reduce uncertainty and anxiety for staff? And then within those meetings, how can we balance a task focus and a relationship focus so that we get the work done and it's also an opportunity for us to connect and build a stronger culture, build stronger teams, build stronger relationships. And I've chosen this word cadence because it has a kind of a number of connotations. You know, the idea of rhythm the idea of flow, the idea of repetition, the idea that there should be some regularity to the ways that we meet and work together, but also the sense that there's some beauty to it, that there's some kind of harmony and some aesthetically pleasing elements to that regularity. And I like the third definition here from Merriam-Webster, a recurrence of a sound, especially in nature. So that there's this sense that this should be something that feels natural to us, and yet it's something that we as leaders have to design. We have to be very intentional about this. And we have to go beyond the kind of emergency mode, reactive kind of, well, we were going to have a faculty meeting, but now school is closed, so I guess we're going to have a Zoom meeting. You know, there were some quick adjustments that we had to make, some kind of rapid pivots in how we work together that we made as schools closed in the early days. But scrambling and just pivoting without much of a plan cannot be our long-term approach as leaders, right? We need to see this more of as more of a design challenge so that there is some intentionality and there is some consistency to it. Welcome everyone who is tuning in. Laura Lynn from Kentucky, Chris from Wilmington. Great to see you here. I think one of the best arguments for establishing a predictable cadence for our meetings is around staff anxiety and around the needs of staff to be able to have a sense of predictability in their work. And if you were not aware that staff anxiety was an issue prior to the closure of schools that started maybe in February or March or even earlier, depending on your location, if you weren't aware of that staff anxiety, if that was not an issue for you prior to this, you are probably aware of it now. It probably is an issue that is on your radar now. And I'm curious, have you had any teachers resign over this? Have you had any teachers say, you know what, I was thinking about retiring anyway, now I'm definitely resigning, I'm definitely retiring, good luck, I will, you know, come check on you later, but you can do this without me. Have you had anybody say that? Let me know what you're hearing in terms of staff. Maybe you're not hearing resignations, maybe you're not hearing about early retirements, but maybe you are getting a lot of questions and a lot of detailed questions and a lot of panicked questions. And sometimes what's really behind that is a sense of anxiety that comes from just the tremendous amount of uncertainty and the tremendous number of open questions that we have about the new school year. And I believe our leadership challenge in this moment is to design predictability in the face of uncertainty and unpredictability. There is a space that we can carve out. Even though there's so much we don't know, so much we don't control, I believe we can carve out a particular domain of predictability when it comes to our meeting cadence. And even if we have to modify our plans, even if we can't stick with our exact plans, even if we have a scheduled meeting and 1 week we just have to move it, it's better to start with something than to just wing it from week to week. So here's specifically what we're talking about today when it comes to establishing a cadence of meetings to get the work done and to maintain professional relationships. First of all, we've got to think very carefully about our faculty meetings and our all staff meetings. And you may want to think about those distinctly. You know, what are the meetings where, hey, we actually really need to have our custodians and our school secretaries, our office staff, and our classroom aides, everybody, not just classroom teachers who teach a course subject, but really everybody. What are our meetings where we really need to have everybody present and really, come together even in a virtual setting? What are the times when we need to have just our basically classroom teachers get together and get on the same page about things? So whole staff, you know, big faculty meetings are kind of one key level. And then of course, our team and department or PLC meetings, you know, the primary work units where teachers collaborate and work together with their immediate teams are key. And then the third level that I want to encourage you to think about is your individual conversations. Now, this is something that often we don't really think about too much. You know, we don't spend a ton of time thinking about how am I going to set up a schedule of regular meetings with individual teachers one-on-one to check in with them. Often that is not a concern because we're going to do that anyway. We're going to run into people just around campus. But if we are not opening school face-to-face, or if we're not certain that we will, if we're not on campus at the end of, you know, what would be the school year or over the summer to do hiring, to meet new staff members, to open the building and open the classroom for new staff members, you know, let them in and show them around, all of those face-to-face interactions that we typically rely on are not going to be there for the purposes of getting the work done or the purposes of building relationships. So those two things, those two goals, I think really are something that we need to be intentional about, and intentional in terms of designing replacement interactions. Here's what I mean by that. So much of the way we know each other, the way we interact with each other, just the sense that we're all part of the same team and that we have this level of camaraderie among us happens not through the formal meetings, not when we sit together in the auditorium or the library around the big round tables and there are bagels. That's not when a lot of this happens, right? A lot of this happens just in the serendipitous interactions, you know, holding the door for someone who's bringing in a box, you know, getting someone their keys, letting them into the classroom, checking your mail in the mail room or the copy room when someone else is in there and just chit-chatting, going to the faculty lounge and refilling your water bottle or getting a cup of coffee or putting your lunch in the fridge. Those informal, serendipitous interactions are such a huge proportion of the relationships that we have with our staff and that staff have with one another, that we will be blindsided if we don't think through some replacement interactions for that lost serendipity. And I think there is a real loss there. Like, we can mourn and we can grieve the loss of that serendipity. And it really is a, you know, a legitimate loss. But at the same time, it's not something that we can't at least partially replace if we are thoughtful and careful about it. So I think we have a design challenge in terms of these meetings of balancing the relationship focus, you know, what you would have gotten around the water cooler and the staff lounge or at the mailboxes, with you know, more purposeful interactions alongside the task focus of, you know, what do we need to discuss? What plans do we need to put together? What work do we need to do together? So that is on the staff side. A couple other things that I had at the bottom of the previous slide here. We also need to think about what our cadence is going to be for students and parents. And of course, for classroom teachers, if there is a period of remote learning where everybody is at home, what is it going to look like for teachers to meet regularly virtually with their students? Is there going to be a Zoom class with a live lesson? Maybe you're going to have students sign into Microsoft Teams for 1 hour a week to really reconnect and chat and you know, feel like they are a classroom culture, and maybe have some direct instruction happening under the teacher's direct facilitation. And maybe there's going to be office hours. Maybe you're going to have a time where students can get on the video conference with teachers and just get some one-on-one help, just reconnect a little bit, not a direct instruction time, but a time where students are able to get that direct support. We had a roundtable for our superintendent's group earlier today, and Peter DeWitt, the author and you know, instructional leadership expert, Peter DeWitt, said he surveyed hundreds of students and talked with them about what worked and what didn't work for them in virtual learning. And they said one of the things they really needed more of was those office hours calls with teachers, just opportunities for them to drop in, check in with their teachers, get help, and feel like they actually were being supported and not just being given work that would then be graded. And he also had good things to say about a limited amount of live teaching on a weekly basis. So definitely something to think through with your staff and talk through as an organization, what that expectation is going to be. And then for yourself as a leader, for your leadership team, thinking in terms of messaging to families. I believe you will be more effective in communicating with families if you have a consistent cadence of communication for families. Maybe you decide that every Sunday night you will do a Facebook Live broadcast or a TikTok. Heaven help us with TikTok. I don't know. Maybe you will or will not choose to tackle that one. But whatever you do, I want to encourage you to consider making it a consistent plan so that people look for it, and so that you remember to do it, and so that you show up, and so that families remember to check it and check in with you and have a sense that, okay, there is a plan, right? There's a lot of anxiety around on the part of parents and students as well, right? And one of the best things that we can do as leaders is to create a sense of predictability and familiarity by having that regular cadence. So if all I do is pick up my phone and do a little Facebook Live every Sunday night at whatever time, you know, works for you, if that is all I do, that is going to be much better than nothing and much better than just sending out the emails and just sending out the, you know, directions in reassuring our school community and communicating in maintaining that relationship. You know, even if there are tons and tons of unanswered questions, and that continues to be frustrating for people, simply showing up in a predictable way is going to do tons to reduce that anxiety and to increase confidence in your leadership. Okay, so we've talked about both the staff and the family and student side, a little bit about relationships. Let's talk about what might happen in some of those staff meetings. I have a question for you here. I suppose this could apply to class meetings as well, but thinking especially in terms of faculty, I have a little informal poll for you here on the screen. Leave a comment and let me know what you think. How do you feel about mandatory fun activities in meetings and professional development? You know, you can include face-to-face meetings and face-to-face professional development as well. Maybe you've been on a corporate retreat, or maybe you've been to a ropes course where you have to do little physical obstacles or team building exercises or trust falls, if you've ever done any of that. How do you feel about those mandatory fun activities? Maybe you've seen them on a TV show if your school hasn't done anything like that specifically. Maybe you've done in your house scavenger hunt for a video meeting that you've had with your faculty. Maybe you've been asked to go and fetch an object that answers a particular question or meets a particular criterion and kind of bring it and hold it up for the camera. Have you done any fun things like that? Leave a comment and let me know. And let me know what your feeling is about it. How do you feel about those mandatory fun activities? I will just, you know, put all my cards on the table here. I have very mixed feelings, and I feel like these are okay things in a very limited quantity. But personally, I'm kind of the personality that wants to get to work, right? If we're spending half of our meeting on mandatory fun, then you know what? Maybe that balance is a little bit off. So I like a little bit of fun to kick things off and to lighten the mood a bit, but I'm very sensitive about time, right? So this is probably not the kind of thing where we can have everybody, you know, go on the camera and share. You know, if we have 50 faculty members, I don't want to hear 50 people, you know, hold up their favorite t-shirt and explain why it's their favorite t-shirt, that kind of thing. Amanda says, sometimes good and sometimes seems like a waste of time. It depends. Let's see, Betsy says, okay, if staff input is considered in what to do. Chris says, sometimes good to loosen things up. I prefer to get started with the work. Samantha says, love them, but not all members put forth the effort. Absolutely, Samantha says, it does bring staff together. Yeah, I think we've got to think in terms of a little bit of fun. And I'm the kind of person who, like, if you tell me that I look grumpy, like if you tell me I'm not smiling, I'm likely to say I am smiling. And you might have to tell me, no, you're not, Justin. You got to smile. And be like, oh, okay. I do have to like be intentional about this. So if that's kind of, if you have a very strong task orientation like I do, give yourself permission to be intentional, even if it feels very formulaic. Okay, I guess I have to think of a fun activity for this week. Like naturally, that is going to be my attitude about it. But we do have to have that level of intentionality. And maybe there's one particular faculty member who can help you brainstorm those fun things and make sure that you don't forget. Like if you're ready to just hit the agenda hard, maybe you can appoint a keeper of the fun who can make sure that you don't jump too directly and too quickly into the task-oriented work, because those relationships are so critical, right? It is absolutely critical that we include a little bit of fun to maintain those relationships. Pamela says, they can be a waste of time, but I think they're great when they deepen relationships and open up thinking. Pamela, I'm so glad that you mentioned thinking here. And Anthony says, good to open up a meeting. Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, I think we need to not just see our colleagues as people that we're in the same boat with. And I think here's where we actually have an opportunity to do better than we do face to face. Often the ways that we interact in, you know, Sarah's formats in school, you know, you bump into somebody else at the copier or in the staff lounge or in the at the mailboxes. And often those interactions are not about our best thinking as professionals, right? We're coming together just because like we're inconveniently sometimes waiting for the copier at the same time. We actually have an opportunity here to really make this about our best professional selves if we're intentional about it. Laura Lynn says, we did a game once using Kahoot, and you know, certainly there are things we can use to get people interacting in a fun way that is still task-focused while building relationships. If you do want to start with something that's completely not task-focused, I think that's probably a good idea to have something that is just a fun question, but we want to keep it quick, right? So here are a couple of thoughts for you on, you know, what kinds of things you might want to start with. You know, maybe you do have people hold up a favorite t-shirt and then explain in the chat why that's their favorite t-shirt. But we want this to be easy. We want this to be quick. We don't want it to be a whole, like, we don't want it to feel like pulling teeth, right? Having been in on a lot of video conferences where people share their answers to fun questions, we do this in a group that I'm a part of, and I have to say, you want to be careful not to ask questions that are going to make some people feel good and some people feel bad. Like, what's a project that you worked on, you know, over this break? You know, if you have a lot of people who have very young children and their main accomplishment has been that everybody is still alive and that they haven't pulled their own hair out, well, that person is going to feel very differently than somebody who's like, well, my kids are grown and they're out on their own. I built a deck and wrote a book. You know, you don't want something that's going to make some people feel great and some people feel terrible. You also don't want something where there's going to be kind of a best answer. Like, you really want to respect everybody's answer here. So opinion questions are great. You know, what's your favorite place to work, or what's your favorite place to hang out within your home or, you know, around your house when you're not working? You know, do you like the couch? Do you like to sit at the kitchen table? You know, what is it for you? Anything like that, that is going to kind of keep it light and allow everybody to participate. Chris, great to see you here. Chris says, 5 or 10 minute activity to allow time to shift mindset, prepare for work together, get to know each other better, and yeah, not too much time. So here's what I have for you on that front. If we're going to go beyond just the fun things, you know, just the quick discussion questions, if you want to go a little bit deeper in the team building, the undercurrent to all of these that you're going to see is professionalism. You know, professional interaction, professional practice to advance professional work. And anytime we can help our faculty know each other better as professionals, right? You are not just someone who stands in front of me and hogs the copier when I'm impatient, right? You are a thinking, living, breathing, intelligent professional. And often if we don't work together directly, if we're not on the same team or in the same department or grade level, it's easy to really never get to know other people as professionals. So some of the things you might want to encourage people to connect around are around their values, what they're grateful for, what they appreciate, what insights they have had. So really we want to tap into developing mutual understanding. We also want to tap into personal reflection, you know, getting people to think about their own practice and how that has changed and how these adaptive challenges that we're facing now as a profession have changed us as individuals and as professionals, right? So if you can think of a really good question to get people talking in this way, you can advance the work, you can strengthen relationships, you can get people to connect and interact and make it more than just mandatory fun. Now, I want to give you a specific suggestion for how you might do this. If you come up with a really good question, rather than simply have everybody answer in the chat, which, you know, you can do in Zoom or Microsoft Teams or whatever kind of meeting, online meeting you're doing, rather than simply use chat, I want to encourage you to get people talking in small groups. And you could do this with a Zoom breakout room, or, shocking suggestion here, you could actually get people to talk on the phone. Pick up the, you know, exchange phone numbers, or, you know, connect on FaceTime or whatever works. You know, Zoom breakout rooms, again, there are lots of different ways you can get people to connect, but get them to connect in small groups about a very high quality question. And there's a process called the three-step interview that I learned in my master's program from one of my professors, Laurie Steven, would always have us use this format called the three-step interview. And what I love about the three-step interview is that each person plays each of three roles. So of course you have to divide into groups of three. Sometimes you might want to do this in established teams. You know, if you have grade level teams of three people each, that might work. But you might want to also mix it up sometimes and get people interacting in order to replace those serendipitous interactions, you know, at the mailboxes, when you're holding a door for someone else, when you're, you know, waiting to microwave your lunch, to replace those interactions between people that don't normally work together. So the first role is the interviewer, and the interviewer's job is very simple. They simply ask the question that you have given everybody, like, what's your top insight about how we can support our students when they're working from home? What have you learned from what we've done so far about how we can best support our students when they're working from home? So all the interviewer has to do is ask that question and let the interviewee talk and maybe probe a little bit, maybe prompt them a little bit and ask some follow-up questions. If time allows, you know, if you need to get the person to say a little bit more, that's the interviewer's job. The interviewee's job is, of course, to simply answer the question. And then the third role is the note taker. Now, the note taker's role is critical for bringing this all back together, right? The note taker is going to simply write down what the interviewee says. All right, so the first person is the interviewer, second person is the interviewee, third person takes notes, and then you rotate. So everybody gets to play all three roles. You do three rounds of this. Everybody gets to be the interviewee, and everybody gets to be the note taker and the interviewer. So you do need groups of three for this. And then after you have all taken your notes, you can fill out a Google form or you can all type in a Google Doc and kind of compile those notes. And what it may be kind of fun to do is to compile those notes without saying whose answer it was, right? Everybody's going to be typing, you know, kind of at the same time and sharing what a different person said. So just to have everybody go to that Google Doc, type in their notes and look at the patterns. And you could even pull that Google Doc up on the screen while people are typing and or maybe wait till they're done just to give people a little bit of privacy and then put it up and say, okay, here is what we came up with around our top insights for how we can support our students when they're working from home, right? So we can combine these small group interactions like we would have at table talk when we're gathered together physically for a faculty meeting with that whole group kind of sense of this is who we are. This is, you know, our collective identity working together on behalf of students. Does that sound like something you could use, the three-step interview? If you're watching live, give me a yes. Or if you're watching this later in our Continuity Project dashboard, just leave a comment here and let me know if that sounds like something you could use. And feel free to take a screenshot here of this three-step interview. I'm going to change the slide in just a second, but all we have to do is simply ask, have a good question for everybody to ask, divide people into groups of three, and allow them to play, have them rotate through these three roles of interviewer, interviewee, and note taker. So would you use that? Let me know what you think about that. Laura Lynn says yes. All right, I'm going to change it here to talking a little bit about accountability as we start to wrap up here. Anthony likes that idea. Thanks, Anthony. Accountability for meetings. Now, it doesn't do much good to establish a consistent cadence for our meetings if people don't actually show up, right? We've got to actually hold people accountable for showing up, and we have got to set some expectations around how people show up. So, of course, you want to have norms around, you know, in what meeting contexts do we have the camera on? Are there situations where it's better to have the camera off so that you're not a distraction to other people? You know, are there meetings where everybody needs to be on camera, you know, for the sake of fully participating? Again, I mentioned that Peter DeWitt shared some insights with our superintendent's group earlier today, and I liked his phrase, bedlam is okay, the bedroom is not okay, right? Like we're not going to have people joining professional faculty meetings lying in bed, but we understand you might have kids running behind you. There might be a soccer ball that gets kicked behind your head. I mean, that's just the reality of, you know, you're going to have dogs barking and things like that. So we've got to be muted, but you know, cats will jump on keyboards and get in front of the web, you know, like things like that are going to happen. And we've got to have patience with, you know, an understanding for each other. So bedlam, but not bedroom. I thought that was a great phrase from Peter DeWitt. In terms of making it easy for people to show up and not have a lot of excuses around technology, we want to have a consistent link. You can do recurring meetings in Zoom and I'm sure other software for making it easy for people to show up. I would suggest that you immediately establish the norm that meetings are recorded, because if for some reason someone is not able to show up for a meeting, you want them to still have that accountability of watching that meeting, of commenting later, of circling back with people. And, you know, we don't want people to not show up with the plan that they'll just watch the recording later. But I think in terms of just, you know, asking for everybody to bring their best, recording those meetings and uploading them to a shared workspace is, I think, a very reasonable expectation. You've got to think through that in your organization, you know, and do what makes sense for you. But, you know, I think if we were meeting together in person, you know, we might have a faculty meeting one week, we're all there. We all see what happens. We might not film it. You know, we usually don't film our staff meetings in person, but if we are going to meet online, you know, that's certainly a reasonable expectation. And if we're meeting in teams, well, what am I doing as an administrator while teachers are meeting in teams or departments? Well, I am almost certainly going to be circulating and visiting each of those team meetings, see if I can provide some support, see how those meetings are going. So I recommend that you also establish the expectation that coaches, administrators, instructional facilitators, any other kind of I'm not a part of a teacher team, staff can drop into those meetings at any time. So the link needs to be shared, the meeting time needs to be announced, and any changes to those, you know, like if the team says, oh, actually, we're gonna meet tomorrow at 8 a.m. instead of today at 3 p.m., well, you know, if that's a decision that that team is free to make, they at least need to let everybody know so that, you know, your instructional coach can drop in, your admin team can drop in, and we can have that same kind of accountability that we would have in person. So just a few adjustments that we've got to make to that regular cadence, but it's gotta be a regular cadence. You know, even if we're not able to meet in person, we've gotta establish that predictability for people. What I think we've gotta be careful about is making sure that we're not asking people to meet for too long, because I think there's been a lot of research and a lot of recognition of the fact lately that you can get zoomed out. Right, you can have too many video conferences, too many meetings. Has that happened to you? Let me know in the chat, in the comments here. Has that happened to you? Have you had to attend too many meetings in a given week while you're working virtually? I think we've got to be careful about meeting length. And there is absolutely no reason that a meeting needs to be an hour, right? There is no magical unit of time that says a meeting needs to be exactly 60 minutes long. If it can be over in 37 minutes, maybe we'll finish this episode in 37 minutes, then cut it off when, you know, as soon as you can. What I think is more important is the frequency, the cadence. It is totally great. If you can have a 7-minute team meeting, great. But what will not work is to have a team meeting every 7 weeks. We've got to meet weekly. You know, the people who work together the most frequently or the most closely need to meet most frequently, but they do not need to be long meetings, because what's happening here is we're needing to replace those casual conversations and informal interactions and maintain those relationships while also getting some work done. But as we have all experienced, there are a lot of meetings that could be an email. You know, if you can send out a Google Doc to communicate information, by all means, of course, we want to use that meeting time for the real interaction and the good stuff, not simply reading announcements. But I would suggest that both your faculty meetings, maybe not your entire staff, like maybe your custodian does not need to, you know, put down whatever they're doing and come and get on a video conference every single week. But you're probably your core faculty need to meet weekly and your teams need to meet weekly, but not necessarily for an hour. I love that Anthony. Anthony says, Anthony's talking about requiring teachers to provide some sort of feedback or reflection from the online meeting to hold everyone accountable. Yeah, and I think that's a great chance, Anthony, to kind of debrief the process and kind of tweak it as well. If you are a Coalition of Essential Schools veteran, you probably are very experienced with kind of debriefing the meeting and the process and figuring out, okay, how can we get better at this? If we're going to be doing a lot of our work in this kind of setting, how can we not just show up and do the work, but actually get better at doing the work? And I think that reflection and that follow-up is fantastic. I mean, you could do that as a Google Form exit ticket. You could do that as some sort of survey. You know, there are lots of different ways we can get feedback on how we're doing collectively and be able to make some improvements. So that is what I have for you today. I want to challenge you to actually do something with this and go into our Continuity Project dashboard and share your meeting cadence. Are you going to have staff meet weekly? Are you going to have teams meet weekly? How often are you going to, you know, to communicate to families? What is your cadence going to be? As you will see when you sign into the Continuity Project, under the Discussions tab, I have a new discussion thread posted, and I want to ask you to log in there and reply, and just let me know what you're going to do. Are you going to have your teams meet weekly? Are you going to have your leadership team meet monthly or biweekly, or maybe once over the summer and weekly during the school year? Let me know what you are thinking in terms of your meeting cadence. And if you have not signed in to the Continuity Project dashboard in SibMe yet, let me tell you why you want to do that. First of all, we have great discussions just like this one. Second, we have all of our past trainings on metaphor, on ritual, on the adaptive and technical challenges of working virtually and reopening schools. All of those trainings are there in our Continuity Project dashboard, and you can watch them and comment on them and leave timestamped comments just as if you had been there live. And I love seeing those comments come in, and I love seeing people discuss with each other. Even if they watch the thing days apart, they're able to interact by responding to one another's comments, and then you can click on the comment and see where in the video, you see what in the video they were commenting on. It's pretty cool. And there's also a transcript and lots of good stuff there. We also have our virtual faculty meeting guide, tips for virtual faculty meetings. You can get that at principalcenter.com/faculty, or it is in the Continuity Project dashboard. So all of the good stuff starts at principalcenter.com/continuity. Sign up there, sign in, just log in, and you will see everything that we have put out so far. And you are welcome to post your questions and share your resources and ideas about how we can approach this challenge as a profession and as professionals. So thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for the work that you are doing every day and your engagement in figuring this out. And I think that's truly what it means to be an instructional leader. And you know, we often say, you know, what's the difference between being a leader and being a manager? Well, whatever we would have been managing is probably disrupted right now, probably somewhat out the window. It really does take leadership to navigate the uncertainty and navigate the you know, the unknowns and the complexity that we're dealing with right now. So thank you for being a leader. Thank you for engaging in this work, and I can't wait to hear from you. So go ahead and go to principalcenter.com/continuity, get signed in, and let me know what you're thinking about your meeting cadence. That is it for this episode of the Instructional Leadership Show, and this has been part 4 of the Continuity Project. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.